All right, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. It is another action-packed, high-caliber episode here of the Crypto 101 Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bryce, as always, joined by my good buddy, Brendan Veman. Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'll tell you what, you know, Bryce, we're coming off of Father's Day, and we were chatting it up before it. I am not a father myself. You sounded like you had a great one. I saw some of the pictures and videos, but I'm sitting here pretty happy, not because of necessarily what's happening here in the crypto market, but I was pretty proud of myself. I think I got one of the best Father's Day gifts, two gifts for my dad that I've ever gotten him. So I'm feeling good just knowing that he's probably going to enjoy it. But man, I'm feeling a little bit extra on top of the world here today at the time of recording this.
I got to know what you got him.
Well, you know, there's two things. He's been really big in the smoking meats. So I got him all these different smoked salts, all these different scents and flavors. And then I got him this electric grill cleaner and smoker cleaner.
Whoa.
So it can like electrically clean this thing for him, make it a little bit easier for him. You know,
love it. Yeah. My wife went all out. I got matching bathing suits with my 2 year old. My kids got some pottery stuff that they did for me. I got a spa day. I mean, I was totally pampered from beginning to end. So it was awesome.
I wish we had a good analogy to just segue us right into how this relates to the crypto markets. But
you know, you got to take the sleepless nights, which again, when you have a 2 year old and a 4 month old, you got a lot of sleepless nights. You got a lot of peaks. You got a lot of valleys. Yeah. Good with the bad. And I think we're bringing on an absolute expert, a sharpshooter here in the crypto market to talk to us today about cutting it straight. Here's kind of what's going on in the crypto market, why things are down, but what the future looks like, why there's institutions that are here that are not building for the next quarter, next year, but they're building for the next 10, 20, 30 years and really doing it on a bedrock of innovation and these trustless, permissionless public protocols. We have the head of research, Mr. Rasterly Rock himself, Ryan Rasmussen, head of research at Bitwise, joining us today. Sir, thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
Wow, what a what an incredible, incredible intro, and a happy belated Father's Day to you, Bryce.
Thank you.
And congrats to you, Brendan, on the exceptional gift. I thought you were going to say you got him some like Bitcoin and hype or something.
Well, here's a segue. This should have been the segue into this, but he is a Bitwise, you know, investor, I guess you could say. He came to me months ago, or it was last year, and he's like, hey, I decided to finally get in on one of those Bitcoin ETFs. I was like, oh no, like I wish you would have talked to me about this beforehand. Like there's some that you want, some that you might just, you know, maybe not want. There's ones that are better than others. And he's like, well, I went with Bitwise. Are they good? And I was like, oh, you're good.
You're good.
Incredible. Wow. Well, next time you talk to him, please tell him thank you. And we appreciate him choosing us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love the you know, not to get too deep into the weeds in the product or anything off the bat, but I love that you guys donate 10% of profits, I believe, to the Bitcoin Core developers. That's something that stood out to me. It's pretty unique.
Yeah. Well, look, we love to do it. And at a time where investors in the industry is worried about things like quantum risk, we think it's, you know, increasingly important to be giving back and contributing to the development of the Bitcoin protocol. There's some great groups in there that we donate to, the Human Rights Foundation, Brink, another one as well. And so happy to give back and hope that it helps, you know, further the ecosystem for the long term, as you mentioned. Look, we're not here for the short term. We're here for 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the road and ensuring that there's funding towards Bitcoin Core developers and continually improving and maintaining the system is really important to us.
Love it. Well, I'm going to start with the hard question first. Get it out of the way. But I think it's the question that's kind of burning in everybody's mind, burning a hole in everybody's pocket. We've got Bitcoin down something like 50% or more from its highs back in October. And many altcoins are kind of down 60, 70%. Unless you're hyperliquid, then you're up. Very few are up on the year or up on the past 12-month basis. But we've got an interesting divergence from traditional markets where S&P, NASDAQ, a lot of these different sectors are up, charging towards new all-time highs. And so I kind of want to get your take just with broad strokes on can we say what went wrong or what is going wrong in the crypto markets, and what might it take to kind of kick us out of this bear market?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Look, that's the question that I think is on everybody's mind. Certainly at Bitwise, my team and myself spent a lot of time speaking with traditional professional investors, financial advisors, family offices, RAs, et cetera. And this is a question that they're asking us, right? What went wrong? Why are we trading down 50% from all-time highs when you see equities trading at new all-time highs almost every other week or so this year? And so I think it's really important to dissect. And I don't think it's any one thing in particular that happened. It's been a combination of several different negative factors that have brought the price of not just Bitcoin, as you mentioned, but basically all crypto assets besides Hyperliquid and maybe some Hyperliquid competitors or Zcash, for instance, has drawn all these prices down. I would note that crypto equities is an area that's done exceptionally well over the past period where crypto assets have drawn down, which I think is interesting and would love to talk about later. But zooming out, when I think about what's happened over the past, call it 9 months since we hit an all-time high of around 125,000 in October, I think it's several factors. Look, we were heading into the fourth year in crypto's famous four-year cycles. I do believe that became a self-fulfilling prophecy, particularly after the October flash crash, which wiped liquidity out of the ecosystem and of course shot prices down in a pretty remarkable fashion instantly. Of course, it was a quick recovery, but I think long-term Bitcoin holders took a step back and said, wow, we've been through this before. I've held this asset as it's gone up a tremendous amount and then fallen 50, 60, 70% through perhaps three cycles in the past. And, you know, we finally hit 100K, which maybe was a mental hurdle that they had hung themselves to, you know, when they bought Bitcoin or over the years. And I think they just said, look, I'm out for now. I don't want to go through this again and then wait another 3 years or 4 years for prices to recover. And I think the data supports that there was a lot of longtime holders selling their Bitcoin. And I do believe that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy to a certain extent. I note, I don't think it's the only factor though. I think there's several other factors that played a role, some macro, some crypto specific. Happy to unpack those if you guys are interested in my thoughts there.
Yeah. Certainly am. What were you going to say, Brennan?
Yeah, no, I was going to say the same thing. I was curious because it does feel like there's so many different ways to look here, right? Do we look at just the crypto market? Do we just look at the four-year cycle? Do we try to look at the traditional financial markets and earnings? And are we going to get a rate cut or a rate hike? Are we going to look at the geopolitical stuff? Like, there's so many different ways to kind of turn your head here and think, this is what I should be paying attention towards. But I'm curious, you know, how do you even manage a market like this? And what kind of catalysts or maybe points of data are you looking for in regards to potentially getting a turnaround or at least an opportunity?
Yeah, well, I think you're exactly right. You have to think about all those factors that you just mentioned. So if we zoom out and think about where we were at in Q4 when the price was declining, there were several other factors at play. We were heading into 2026 with the expectations that we'd have several interest rate cuts and that we'd get the Clarity Act to pass in Q1 of this year. And we were coming off of these, you know, relatively strong tailwinds with the Genius Act being signed and very strong ETF inflows and corporations like Strategy and a bunch of other treasury companies buying crypto assets like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, et cetera. And so you had all of these tailwinds. And then I think each of those just kind of blew out going into the new year. I mean, immediately in the new year, we had a rise in geopolitical conflict with the U.S.'s actions in Venezuela. And then shortly thereafter, the Iran and U.S. war, you know, reared its head and kind of shook all markets temporarily. But I think what that did in terms of macro drivers is it reduced the likelihood, and you see that reflected in the data from last week's FOMC meeting, it reduced the likelihood of interest rates from being cut several, several times to potential interest rate hikes. And I think that plays a massive force on the price of Bitcoin and crypto assets. And so I think people look at geopolitical conflict as like the driver, right? Oh, we had the Venezuela conflict. Now we have this issue with Iran, et cetera, which like those are drivers. But I think the knock-on effects is what really matters here is that you have prolonged conflict in the Middle East, which drives up the price of oil, which means that inflation expectations going forward are higher, which reduces the likelihood of interest rate cuts. And that liquidity impact of you know, higher interest rates rather than lower interest rates comes full circle back to crypto assets, which have historically performed well in low rate environments. So I think that's a pretty strong driver of what's happening here. The reason why I think that's the case is because if you look at what happened with the price of Bitcoin, and I'll use that as an example for all crypto assets, is immediately after the Venezuela geopolitical conflict, the price of Bitcoin performed decently well, right? Mm-hmm. Then you look at what happened immediately with the Iran conflict as the market digested the news, everything sold off, and then Bitcoin rebounded and actually outperformed stocks and outperformed gold in the period following the war. And then you had the knock-on effect of, okay, this is going to have a big impact on markets. It's going to have a big impact on inflation. It's not going away anytime soon, seemingly. What does that mean for interest rates? Interest rates, of course, now are expected to be risen. I think that's when you start to have this real negative force on the Bitcoin and crypto ecosystem, which historically, as I mentioned, perform well in low rate environments. So I think that's a major factor. Other things, of course, that we talked about briefly a second ago is the Clarity Act. It went from likelihood that it was passing at the beginning of the year to now having, what, 3 to 4 weeks left of Senate floor time that we need to get it through. I know there's a session scheduled to dig into it with the Senate in the next month or so, but the time and the window is closing there as well. That's a negative factor on a regulatory front. The interest rates is a kind of macro negative factor. And then you have slowing ETF flows, reversing corporate purchases. You have the worries about strategy. Think what all this combines to is the perfect storm for crypto that aligned with this four-year cycle prophecy that clearly became self-fulfilling. And all of those things put us smack dab in the middle of a classic crypto winter.
You know what slows teams down more than anything? It's not always headcount, budget, or even the tools themselves. It's when the way work gets done lives in someone's head and never actually gets documented. Then someone new joins, a new platform gets rolled out, or a teammate leaves, and suddenly everyone's doing the same process in a different way. That's exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Scribe is a workflow AI platform that captures any workflow in real time and turns it into a step-by-step documentation automatically. You just turn on the extension, do the process like you normally would, and Scribe builds the guide as you go, capturing every click, step, and screenshot. And it's already trusted by over 80,000 enterprises, including nearly half of the Fortune 500. With our team being remote, I have definitely had moments where I've had to explain the same setup or process more than once to a colleague, and it always feels like something that should have been documented the first time. With Scribe, what could take hours of writing, screenshots, and cleanup can be ready to share in under a minute. Scribe also automatically redacts sensitive information like names, emails, and account numbers from screenshots. Admins can enforce that across the team so nothing slips through the cracks. Plus, anyone following the process can get real-time on-screen guidance showing exactly where to click inside the actual tool. And Scribe doesn't just document workflows. It uses AI to suggest ways to improve them, helping you spot redundant steps, bottlenecks, and places to simplify. To book a personalized enterprise demo, visit scribe.how/crypto101. That's scribe.how/crypto101.
Well, hopefully if the self-fulfilling prophecy worked on the way down, it will work in reverse back on the way up as it typically does, right? Because, you know, typically there's like the drawdown for about a year, you know, anywhere 300, 400 days after that. So October to October, we'll have a bad year. And then we'll start that sort of 3-year chug back on the way up towards new all-time highs. So, very curious to see but the whole 10-10 thing, right? On October 10th, that really seems like a day that it broke a lot of the correlations to M2 money supply as well. I mean, if you guys remember, Bitcoin was tracking and the crypto market cap was like, if M2 was going up, Bitcoin was going up. If M2 was going down, and then that day happened and it really did rock the world. And that correlation broke. The correlation with equities broke very, very strong. I saw ever since then, you know, actually a little bit before then, like we've dropped our basically 1-year rolling correlation to equities. And so that, you know, has been something typically when risk on is in the markets, you know, crypto goes up and it's just like this correlation trade and that's completely broke. I mean, I feel like, and I'm curious if from your standpoint you saw this, like, I don't know if market makers got scared out of the market or if some just got completely wiped out. I know funds that, you know, got wiped out during that period, auto deleveraged. That was a really defining moment. And it seems like, you know, I don't know, it kind of was the Wizard of Oz moment when the curtain gets pulled back and you see like who's behind the curtain. You're like, oh my gosh, Binance is like running on, you know, twigs and sticks practically compared to the traditional markets. And so we're just not going to touch this until it gets real regulation, because there was no recourse. You can't go knock on Binance's door and say, hey, like, give me my money back. You know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I mean, it's just a lot more difficult. Whereas if you're on the CME or you're using Interactive Brokers and like, there's much more, you know, security around like the leverage that you're using and margin and all that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, people just realize like, oh, we can't be using KuCoin for 50x leverage and like all these, you know, whatever. Not to throw any of these guys under the bus or anything. It was just a big moment that people realized. And so market structure kind of got just decimated. And I think we're healing from that. And I think it's good. You alluded to the Clarity Act. That's going to be like the first next big step to getting like, you know, institutional money comfortable. But I also saw like, you know, some of these other companies like yourself and T. Rowe Price was one that I just saw in the news just the other day launching a new ETF where it actively manages 15 different commodity cryptos. And so, you know, you could see sort of the writing on the wall, the big asset managers, you know, I think they got $2 trillion under management. These guys are going to start coming in as there's more clarity and launching these more, you know, innovative products and stuff that are going to be trying to outperform indexes. But, yeah, it just seems like, you know, that 10-10 day was really a bad day, a sad day, but we're slowly starting to make our way back. I think the Clarity Act's going to happen. But yeah, at the end of the day, you know, this has been a really, you know, trying period here in the market. So, yeah, definitely, you know, curious to kind of get your thoughts on, you know, is there going to be something in particular that kind of kicks us out of this bear market, as opposed to, you know, just time? And is it going to be something like people starting to value altcoins or value cryptos based on cash flows and like that narrative to start kick in? And or is it just, we got to wait for the rate cuts? We got to wait for, you know, the war to like officially come to an end. Like, how are you kind of thinking about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think these are all really great points. It speaks to this combination of negative factors that have put us to where we're at today. Right. And it's easy to see in hindsight, but when you look back over these several cycles that crypto's been through, there's always been this kind of market structure decimating catalyst, mm-hmm. right? It was the ICO craze in 2017. It was the collapse of Luna, then CeFi lenders, then FTX in 2022.
Totally.
I think this 10-10 moment where you saw a massive leverage wipeout in the crypto ecosystem, the biggest that's ever occurred in crypto, is another one of those moments. And of course, you have knock-on effects of those that funds and firms that were overexposed, even individual investors who got wiped out because maybe they were using platforms or vaults that were unregulated or underregulated. And those kinds of things have the snowball effect to take down liquidity in the ecosystem, sentiment, et cetera. So I think that's exactly kind of what sparked this fire. I mean, the other thing that we haven't talked about yet, which I definitely think is contributing to the lack of performance or the underperformance of crypto relative to equities, is this capital rotation that's clearly happened into AI equities and IPOs, right? We just had the world's largest IPO of all time, what, two weeks ago, right? And so you can't think about what's happening to crypto in too much isolation in terms of capital rotation. I mentioned that we spent a lot of time at Bitwise speaking to Wall Street and financial advisors all around the country and really the world. And what I can tell you is they are 100% focused on equities, and very few of them are hyper-focused on crypto at the moment. Now, that doesn't mean all advisors and all wealth managers are ignoring crypto. It just means that most of their attention is going elsewhere. And with that attention, capital follows. And so I think that That's a big factor here. I mean, you mentioned the relationship between global money supply and Bitcoin performance breaking down really starting in Q4 of last year. And that's actually something we've been asked about quite frequently over the past few months. And the interesting thing that I point to when I speak to wealth managers who are trying to understand what's going on is that there's a lot of data that shows that over the long term, the growth in global money supply, or rather the change in global money supply, is responsible for driving about 50% of Bitcoin's returns. But what that means is that there's another 50% of drivers of Bitcoin returns that is not related to money supply. And I think those are other macro factors like interest rates, which of course have an impact on money supply, but have a more direct impact on things like investor sentiment, et cetera. There are regulatory factors, the Clarity Act being one that we spoke about in terms of crypto-specific regulatory factors. And then there's other things like demand versus supply. And of course, we've had a huge slowdown in ETF purchases. Mm. We've had a huge slowdown in corporate purchases. I think the ETF purchases is explained by both the price action and the capital rotation. The corporate purchases is, of course, one of the things that got crypto out over its skis last year. We had like this crazy wave of treasury companies coming in and raising a ton of capital, buying crypto. Now they're trading at massive discounts. Everyone's worried about Strategy and Stretch and Tom Lee's Ethereum treasury company and their similar products, et cetera, et cetera. And so I just think that all of these things right now are creating a crazy kind of time to understand what's driving crypto and really impacting sentiment. What I will say zooming out is that I think all of these things will turn positive for crypto over the long term. I think absolutely what happens with capital rotation is it eventually finds its way to rotate out of the hottest thing and back into other things. I think we'll see capital rotate back into crypto and other asset classes. I think that the uncertainty around interest rates is probably overblown. Net net, my expectations is that we don't get any hikes or cuts this year. Now, that's my expectation. I could be wrong about that, but just the change from having the likelihood of several interest rate cuts to no rate cuts impacts investor sentiment and how investors allocate capital. If you think about it on a personal basis, perhaps you've been waiting to buy a house for interest rates to come down, and now you think they're going to go up. Are you going to stay out of the market for a couple more years and or for a couple more months and wait and see? Are you going to rush to buy? I don't really know. Everyone's different, but the reality is it changes the way investors think. No investors like uncertainty. Markets hate uncertainty. So I think that causes some issues. I think we'll churn through the Clarity Act noise over the next few months. And I don't say noise to imply it doesn't matter, but I just think the uncertainty of whether it's going to pass or not needs to work its way through the market. I think it's about a coin flip. I know you mentioned, Bryce, you think it's likely to pass. Some days I feel the news flow indicates it is. I will say that we spent a lot of time talking to folks that spend time in DC, and recently they've been pretty pessimistic about the likelihood of it passing, in part because the window to pass is short, but also there's this big divisions on things like ethics provisions and DeFi. And so far, all the focus has been on stablecoin yield, but it's not the only issue to churn through. Mm. And then I think eventually, as I mentioned, capital rotates back. Strategy, other Bitcoin treasury companies will continue to find ways to accumulate Bitcoin. Traditional investors who allocate through model portfolios or use wealth managers who are just now getting approval to allocate to Bitcoin ETFs and crypto ETFs, they will soon start adding 1, 2, 3, 5% allocations of crypto to their portfolios. And these are long-term kind of passive inflows into the assets. And so I think those are short-term headwinds that will turn in favor of crypto just as they turned against crypto. That happens all the time in markets and in cycles. The long-term drivers are still there. Like if you think what I like about the money supply data that shows that it drives up 50% of Bitcoin performance is that like you can just zoom out and say, look, do you think money supply globally is going to grow or shrink over the next 20 years? I think if anyone said they think it's going to shrink, I would call them crazy because it's just not going to.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it easier to zoom out and say, what assets do I want to own in that environment? And how do I think crypto will perform in that environment? And then you have all these other things which create short-term tailwinds, which I think will turn in favor of crypto over the long term.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I love all that. You know, kind of double clicking on the ETF stuff, I think we're coming out of a period back half of last month, first half of this month. There was a period where we had like 13 days of net outflows, which was a record for the ETFs. And so these products are great. They still have accumulated, I think, over $50 billion of new inflows since they launched on net. And so it's still, one of these, BlackRock's most successful product in terms of how quickly it got to $100 billion under management. I think Morgan Stanley said it was their quickest, best launch on day one. You guys have had a blowout. But this does cut both ways. When investors get really bearish on the market, they could just as easily sell it. They don't have to go fumble through their cold storage and, send it to Coinbase anymore. And then halfway through, is it even worth it? I'm just going to sit it out, right? So it's like the ease of the product, the leverage on the product that you can get, the options you could write on it. All this is kind of suppressed volatility. Do you see this? And by the way, since that 13-day outflow, we've had, some positive days, some negative days. So it's kind of started to oscillate. But do you see that as is there any signal in any of that? Or is it just, hey, this is, when the market's down, people are going to be selling. When the market's up, people are going to be buying.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Certainly the ETF inflows, which led directly to a ton of buying of Bitcoin, because as you operate an ETF, you take in inflows, you go and buy the underlying spot crypto asset in terms of Bitcoin or crypto spot ETFs. And so that creates demand for the asset and that drives the price up. And then the inverse is true when outflows go out. Look, ETFs are going to have inflows. They're going to have outflows. We spoke a lot with investors and publicly saying that, yes, it's incredible that we've had these record-setting inflows in terms of Bitcoin ETFs, but we should make sure everyone's aware that there will be periods where you see outflows. It's not only true for Bitcoin ETFs. The same was true for gold ETFs or other ETFs. Zooming out over the long terms, ETFs have seen an incredible amount of inflows, not just for crypto, but they've grown from like zero to 20 plus trillion over the past 20 to 30 years. And so, a lot of that has to do with passive inflows from 401ks or investors that just allocate every single paycheck. Index funds drive a lot of inflows into assets. You mentioned earlier, Bryce, that we've moved kind of beyond spot crypto ETFs like Bitcoin or Ethereum ETFs to some asset managers, including Bitwise, launching index fund ETFs. I think that will be a long-term massive source of buying pressure and demand into the leading crypto assets. And that spreads out beyond Bitcoin. It also makes the decision easier for a lot of allocators who don't spend that much time thinking about crypto but want to have broad exposure. It's the same way they allocate to other asset classes like equities, like other alternative asset classes, like private credit, real estate, etc. And so I do believe that index funds will be a massive, index fund adoption by traditional investors will be a massive long-term tailwind. But yeah, the flows matter. Certainly, I do think there's signal in flows, but a lot of, with a lot of things, flows follow price, both up and down. I'd give an anecdote from what we're seeing when we spend time with some of the major wealth management platforms. Is that they're, 2 weeks ago now? Yeah, 2 weeks ago now, I was at a conference with one of the leading wirehouses in the world, right? There's four major wirehouses. These guys manage trillions of dollars. They have the best wealth managers in many cases in the world.
Is that like Bank of America? Like who? Yeah. What are the main wirehouses?
Yeah, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. There's four of them. And they control like trillions. And trillions is like such a huge number. I don't think people wrap their minds around how big trillions are. But like they control.
Elon now knows.
Yeah. Well, they control so much. Elon knew. I don't know. I don't know if it's come back down over the past 2 days or so. But it's like so much wealth they control. And so I was meeting with several of these at a conference. And the questions they're asking are questions that you would hear typically early in someone's journey into crypto, right? Mm. For example, I was asked, how do you know 21 million Bitcoin will ever exist? Can't they just create more? Right now, for those of us that have been in crypto for a long time, that's a hurdle we got over very, very early on in our journey. And then if you think about how much have you invested in crypto once you've gotten through that hurdle, and then the other questions that were asked around, can't the government just regulate this away? Like, what does Bitcoin mining even mean? Like, how are they pulling these like digital things out of the ground? It was like actually a question that I was asked 2 weeks ago. And so I think you have to level set in terms of how early they are in their adoption cycle. And of course, after the understanding, then comes the allocations. And I bring that up because I bring that story up because that's indicative of where the traditional wealth management industry is in terms of crypto adoption. And if they're there with Bitcoin, many of them haven't even heard of Solana, definitely haven't heard of Hyperliquid. Many of them haven't heard of Ethereum. That doesn't mean they'll never invest in them, but I just think it means that it's much slower than people assume. It's also why I think index funds will be really big, is because you can just buy an index fund, have exposure to all the things in crypto without having to understand and pick and choose winners on a one-by-one basis.
Hmm. Well, one of the things you mentioned earlier was crypto equities. And for the listeners out there, that's basically referring to these crypto-based stocks for the most part. And you mentioned that they've been performing pretty well. And it sounds like a lot of different portfolio managers are kind of focused over there as well. I'm just curious, which crypto equities or which type of crypto equities do you like the most, or are you the most interested? Because you have miners, you have brokerages, you have service providers, there's DATs out there. What do you find the most interesting, and which ones are you maybe paying the most attention to?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really interesting topic to explore. I'm just pulling up some data real quick to kind of show the difference, right? I mean, so Bitcoin is down what? I don't know, 40% year to date, something like that.
Yeah.
The Bitwise Crypto Innovators Index, which tracks 30 publicly traded crypto companies, is up 30% year to date, 33% year to date, right? And like, that's a crazy divergence. A year ago or 4 years ago, this launched in 2021, they moved somewhat in lockstep with crypto equities just being high beta to Bitcoin. And I think the reason for the divergence is twofold. And then I'll get to kind of the specific companies that we like or types within there. But I think the reason that you've seen crypto equities diverge from crypto assets is because you have more, a wider breadth of crypto companies going public these days than you did 3 or 4 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. You have companies like Figure, which give you tokenization exposure. You have Circle, which gives you stablecoin exposure. I mean, we've had several mega IPOs, of course, not to the tune of SpaceX, but I say mega IPO in terms of crypto world, this year. And before that, you really had this huge slowdown in IPOs trailing back to the Coinbase IPO of last cycle. And so I think you have more publicly traded companies in crypto that are high quality entering the space. You also have some other tailwinds around AI, because many of these Bitcoin miners have spent the past decade building out massive data centers that now all of a sudden are in extremely high demand by AI companies, right? And so they're able to diversify their revenues and grow their businesses in other ways outside of just Bitcoin mining and price appreciation, which Bitcoin mining is like a highly commoditized business where margins are really tough. So now they have this other tailwind and they can toggle back and forth between the two. And as Bitcoin price action comes back, they'll toggle on Bitcoin mining. And as it moves, they'll, you know, allocate to AI. And so that's an example of why you've seen this decoupling. You have other drivers that push crypto equities higher than you do crypto assets. Some drivers are the same, some drivers are different. I think within the crypto equity sector, you have some really interesting areas. I actually find Bitcoin miners super fascinating. Many of these Bitcoin miners, I doubt, thought about AI as a secondary revenue stream 10 years ago when they started building these data centers. But they've ultimately created a really successful business in building out these data centers and locking down these agreements with power and energy companies. And I think that'll continue to be a tailwind for them. So I find them super interesting. I think we'll see consolidation in the miner space, both in terms of the mom and pop miners continue to be absorbed by the larger miners. It's you know, harder for them to compete with lower Bitcoin prices in an already tight margin business. I also, you know, as we're seeing, some miners are actually pivoting fully away from AI. I think that leaves room for land grabs for miners who want to do both or want to stay pure play miners. So I think that area is super interesting. Of course, Galaxy Digital is fascinating because they kind of have feet in both worlds, crypto and AI. Stablecoin issuers like Circle, tokenization platforms like Figure, crypto exchanges like Coinbase. I'm massively bullish on all three of those companies in the financial services sector within crypto. If I zoom out and think what's going to happen to stablecoins and tokenization over the next decade, right? Those are going to, at least in my opinion, and I think many people believe this, grow many, many, many times over as they grow into trillion-dollar plus markets. And a lot of investors ask us, where will that value accrue? And of course, some of it we believe will accrue to the underlying infrastructure, the Solanas, the Ethereums, the Hyperliquids, the Chainlinks of the world. But of course, some of it will also accrue to the service providers, these publicly traded companies who have licenses and provide the business facing and institutional facing products. And I think, you know, getting exposure to those mega trends is really important, and crypto equities help you do that in a really compelling way. And then I would just, last thing I'll add here is that the convergence of crypto and AI creates this really, really interesting space with crypto equities that I think most of Wall Street has completely missed outside of the miners. In my view, Coinbase, for instance, is going to, at some point, the scent of Coinbase's AI opportunity is going to be caught onto by Wall Street. And I think it will massively catch up to these other names that have rallied in the AI tailwinds. Their X402, which allows agentic payments from agent to agent on HTTP. Super fascinating. That's a massive market. Agentic finance is going to be huge. They're going to need ways to pay. They're going to use stable coins. Well, Coinbase has massive stable coin exposure. Who knows if Coinbase gets into like the data center space, but I wouldn't be shocked to see that. They just rolled out the world's, I think, first regulated investment advisor agent, which is like incredible to me as someone who's been in the wealth management industry for over a decade. Like that is so fascinating to me and is clearly the next evolution of wealth management, at least for a portion of the market. So anyways, I'll stop there. But I think crypto equities are fascinating because they have several different tailwinds, or they combine several different tailwinds that maybe aren't as clear for crypto assets as they can be with crypto equities.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I could definitely see the next big winners of this next bull cycle kind of concentrating the bulk of the gains in equities or in, you know, these crypto equity ETFs and things that you offer, which I want to dive into in just a bit. But I do want to circle back to, I'll call it the altcoin question, right? Where it's just like, hey, at the end of the day, are these things a viable investment instrument? Are these things, you know, and obviously we've got some that have done extremely well. Hyperliquid, we've mentioned, who didn't pioneer the buyback and burn by any method, by any means, but they mastered it, I would say. You've got things like Sky, formerly, you know, MakerDAO, which has been around for years and years, 10 years now at this point. And they, you know, buy back and, you know, burn or add to a liquidity pool certain, you know, based on a certain percentage of their fees. You know, a lot of these have, you know, the fee switch kind of there just in case they want to switch over. But I guess the long-winded way, I'll kind of narrow it down, is basically what will define the winning altcoins? Will it be a certain metric? Will it be a certain model? Like if you had, you know, $1,000 or whatever that you were going to buy, you know, 10 different altcoins, like, not saying what would those altcoins be, but what would they look like? You know, they would all have great network growth or daily active users. Or like, what is it that really is attractive to you right now?
I love this question in part because I think the answer is very different today than it was 3 years ago. And
agreed.
It's a lot more clear today than it was 3 years ago. And I think a big reason for that is the regulatory momentum behind the crypto industry. You mentioned things like Hyperliquid, which of course we run the world's largest Hyperliquid ETF. At Bitwise, we have, you know, we also use 10% of the revenue generated from that product to buy and hold Hype on our balance sheet. So we're big believers in the Hyperliquid ecosystem. But I think, you know, that's one great example of this kind of post-pro crypto regulatory shift It's one of those assets that's come out of that that's benefited from that, because now these platforms and these tokens can say, look, we are going to accrue value from the underlying network and products we are creating, and we're going to pass that value on to our investors. They couldn't do that before because Gary Gensler was like haunting them, in their in their dreams and nightmares, and like they thought Senator Warren was going to take her army and like break down their office doors and take them prisoner, right? And so
insert
now,
Gary Gensler and Elizabeth Warren memes here.
Exactly. Like we use those memes, or we've seen those memes, but like those were real feelings that these people had, and you saw that reflected in the geo blocking of U.S. users, or the moving offshore of all of this crypto infrastructure, and in the way that these tokens were designed from a tokenomics perspective. And I think you couldn't have these foundations or these labs companies, which now are kind of merging back and really putting all of their effort behind building a valuable ecosystem that accrues to the underlying token. You couldn't have that back then because the risk to those individuals and to those companies was just too high. And you didn't have investors putting capital there because the risk was just too high. And now what we've seen is a pro-crypto SEC and CFTC, in a lot of ways, a pro-crypto Congress and, of course, White House come in and say, look, we're going to create the sandboxes and innovation exemptions to allow this industry to come back on shore, be accessible by U.S. investors, and find ways to accrue value from and generate value with this innovative technology. So I think Hyperliquid is a great example of that. Of course, using 99% of fees to buy and burn the token is an incredible buyback when you stack it against things like the S&P 500 average buyback of like 2% or something. Hyperliquid is like 5% of the market cap. So it looks more attractive to traditional investors. It is more attractive than crypto assets typically have been in terms of passing value on to investors. I think that's one reason why Hyperliquid's done so well. And it's why you're starting to see, I don't want to call them copycats because I don't want to disparage the projects that are kind of pivoting this way, because I think this is a great way to think about it. But you've seen a lot of, you know, models replicating Hyperliquid in terms of increasing the buyback. You've seen others who focus on using revenue and cash flow to invest in growth. That's also typical of startups, and I think that's a really good strategy as well. But zooming out, and sorry to kind of weave through the answer here, but to answer your question, I think the projects that are really going to benefit over the long term and do well are those that focus on growth and monetization as if they were traditional startups. It's incredible to build a network that is used globally 24/7, that the world's largest enterprises, financial institutions are building on top of. But there's not a big reason for investors to put capital into that ecosystem and own the underlying asset unless they expect to see some monetization of that network. I used a lot of buzzwords there. So what do I mean by that? It's like they need to figure out ways to generate revenue and pass that revenue on to investors and grow their businesses.
Yeah, I love that. And I hope that some of those get some ETFs.
And it sounds like what you're saying here is that it kind of comes down to two things. Number one, actually producing some real revenue, right? Making money. And then the other thing is somewhat just tokenomics, right? How can the projects themselves actually deliver value back to the holders? If you go and you look at the stock market, right? Well, if you own shares, you own, you know, a very small fraction of the underlying company if it's publicly traded. And thus, you're getting kind of a piece of the pie in that way. Now, some pay dividends, some don't. There's a lot of nuance that can be involved with it. But I'm curious if with crypto equities becoming more popular and there's more of them coming out there and the space is becoming more mainstream, I'm curious if because crypto equities are judged off of earnings, if maybe now people are starting to look at crypto projects and judge them off of a similar base as well. The other thing here is that maybe in addition to just that thought that, you know, crypto has started to be around for a little bit longer now, right? It's not 1 year, 5 years, 10 years old. You start having the crypto space mature. It's reached at one point a multi-trillion dollar market cap. You have a lot of these different projects that have been around for years now. And people are starting to say, I think kind of like what you said, is more of like an investor or traditional mindset when it comes to this stuff, which is, hey, how can I benefit off of this underlying token and how is it going to give back to me? And in order to do that, there has to be some sort of money coming in as well and some sort of activity more than just saying, hey, guys, here's the potential and hoping that maybe it comes.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. We're moving from the phase of here's a cool concept. Let's see if it gains traction and we'll figure out how to monetize it later. I believe we're moving from that phase of crypto, which was important to grow awareness and adoption and grow the industry. But I think we're now moving to a show me how that system and that innovation and that new product and that growth captures value as an investor. And I know that there's, you know, a cohort of crypto enthusiasts and builders who hate that, right? And and like that is the reality. There are many people that got into crypto because of its desire to not extract value and create public goods. But I think investors are investing in crypto because they want to derive value from this innovative technology. Yeah. Like they wouldn't be investing in AI companies as an example if these AI companies weren't generating revenue to the tunes of tens or hundreds of billions in run rate, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're competing with investors, or sorry, if you're competing with AI companies for capital from investors, that's what you're competing with, right? And that's why capital is rotated away from crypto. This doesn't apply to Bitcoin because, of course, Bitcoin isn't really comparable. It's more of a gold-like asset, but it compares to all the other crypto assets, which are built around providing a product and generating fees on that product's usage and growth. And so I think it's going to become increasingly important. There are some blockchains and apps that have incredible moats, but I think they'll have to defend those moats increasingly when it comes to investors around how are you monetizing, how are you growing revenue. You may have to increase fees in order to compete, right, or drive additional usage. But I think we've left the days behind us of all you have to show is product market fit. I think now you have to show a real, you know, desire to generate profit and grow your profits. And that can be net positive for society and net positive for investors.
Yeah, dude, I completely agree. I think what we're going to see here is a whole new breed of altcoins come up. We're already seeing like a whole new breed of crypto-based equities where now you can get exposure beyond just like one, two, or three different crypto stocks out there. And I think what we'll see kind of usher in with this is just that, just again, a whole new breed of crypto projects come out and be born from something like this. And kind of
just to piggyback on that, and I know we only have about 5 minutes left before the top of the hour, but I can't imagine when the Clarity Act eventually kind of comes to pass, I think there's going to be a lot of new altcoins that actually get launched in the States. I think people are just waiting for that regulatory clarity before like all new business models, like in existing companies and new companies. I think there's going to be another Cambrian explosion of altcoin innovation once we get past that, because then the rules are going to be written. Everybody's going to know the right regulations to adhere to and who to report to. And like those might be the winners of the next cycle, the ones that haven't even been created yet. But anyhow, just a side thought.
No, it's a good point. And what I hope is that for a lot of these old projects that they either adapt or I think they'll die, right? I think you're going to have a lot of these old projects that maybe are making money but aren't giving anything back to token holders. People are going to say, well, why would I put my money in this? You know, token holders get nothing back. Sure, they're maybe being successful, but they're the ones benefiting. I'll go invest and put my money into the ones where I know I'm going to benefit more from this. And again, we'll kind of see, but as the space gets competitive, I mean, that's how you get more innovation. One final thing I just had to ask you about, Ryan, was I've seen the team over there, I think yourself and maybe some of the other team members still kind of call for this maybe 100 plus different crypto ETFs that could launch here inside the US over the course of the next year. I've got to ask, does a drawdown like this change the pace of those kind of products, or change the way that you maybe look at this and say, oh, well, maybe we should delay launching all these other things that are in store, or maybe we should change up what we have in store? Does that throw a wrench in any of this, or are you still saying let's chug ahead?
No, it's a really good question. You know, so yeah, we put out at the beginning of the year our predictions for 2026, and one of those was that 100 plus crypto ETFs would be launched this year. If you look back at what's launched since January, it's been a phenomenal amount. I don't have the number in front of me, but there's been so many new ETFs that have launched. I know we've launched a bunch of DeFi alone, and there's other in the space as well. And these aren't just like spot crypto ETFs. These are income options, income ETFs, or momentum or factor based ETFs, or indexed ETFs, or staking ETFs, et cetera. Right. So there's a wide range of different ETFs that fit this prediction, if you will, of ours. I don't think the market sentiment changes the approach, at least at Bitwise, it doesn't. The way I think about it is that we've had a decade of pent up demand for ETFs without the ability to launch them as an industry. Mm-hmm. And with the launch of Bitcoin ETFs in January 2024, then Ethereum in July 2024, then a huge delay until we started seeing things like Solana and Hyperliquid ETFs, we've slowly seen that demand trickle into the market. But a lot of it today is really held up by how much attention and time that regulators can focus on crypto ETFs and approving these things against the other things that they're focused on, right? And it is a big initiative for the SEC. Like, the SEC came out with a thing called Project Crypto and a crypto task force. Like, that's an incredible thing to say. Like, 3 years ago, we would have been like, you guys are crazy, or you would have heard crypto task force and like,
ran the other way.
Yeah, you would have hidden your closet and like called your like mom and cried or something. But like, no, it's to support the growth of crypto and crypto innovation. So when I use that analogy, I guess just to round it out, is like, I think there's a huge demand of crypto ETFs to come to market because investors want access, and many traditional investors use ETFs and they aren't going to use self-custody or crypto exchanges, right? They're going to go through their brokerage account or their wealth manager, which for the most part buys ETFs. It's like a dam, and there's this huge flow of water waiting to come through, and regulators just slowly let water through based on how they can review and churn through these applications, mm-hmm. which is a, you know, long and slow process. So, you know, do I see us as an industry launching 100 crypto ETFs in 2026? Yes. Do I think it's slowing down because of the market? It might be for some firms, but it's not for us at Bitwise. We're fully focused on building out the best menu of ETFs and crypto investment vehicles for traditional and retail investors to get exposure to crypto. And that includes ETFs, it includes vaults, it includes staking products, it includes private funds. We're here to support investors gaining exposure to what we believe is one of the most innovative asset classes and innovative technologies of the past few decades. And in our view, is very long-term. So whether the market's down today or this month or this year versus last year or yesterday or last month, doesn't matter to us. Our view is that the market's gonna grow many, many, many times over the next few decades. And we want to be there to support investors on their journey.
Brilliant. Really, really appreciate all this really unique insight that folks just couldn't find anywhere else. And so, Ryan, look, we really appreciate your time. And I've got a whole list of questions that I didn't even have time to go through. So that means we're going to have to bring you back on, whether you like it or not. We'll set up some more time in a quarter or two. I know our listeners are going to love it. But where could people subscribe to your research, whether they're institutions listening or retail guys and gals? And where could people just find out generally a little bit more about the products you offer as well?
Yeah, well, everything that we do is available at bitwiseinvestments.com. All of the research that we produce is publicly available, and I would urge people to go there. Matt Hogan, our CIO, writes a weekly newsletter called the CIO Memo. It's 5 minute or less read on how we're viewing and what we're seeing in the market. Would urge everyone to subscribe to those to get our latest thoughts in your inbox every single week. You can check out everything about our suite of products and different services we provide on our website. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Bitwise is our corporate handle. And then I'm available at Rasterly Rock on Twitter. And I would just urge anybody also to reach out to us with any questions at research@bitwiseinvestments.com if they want to chat with us.
Brilliant. All right. Well, we really are looking forward to the next time we get to chat, and everybody at home watching or listening, Spotify, YouTube, Apple, wherever it is, we really appreciate all of your guys' support. Hold strong through this little bear market. This too shall pass. All right, everybody. We'll see you guys back same time, same place next week for another great guest.